what really led me back to wanting to build that business again was really that it gave me something else to focus on. I was in intensive physical therapy and occupational therapy, 6 to 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And I just felt like I needed something more than just that.
Welcome to the Mittland Money Mindset. This is a podcast that's all about getting your mind right when it comes to all things money. In every episode, we go deep with engaging guests who provide tangible takeaways and a whole lot of joy along the way. I hope you enjoy these conversations as much as I enjoyed having them. Let's dive into today's show. I'm Larry Sprung, your host for the Mittland Money Mindset and founder and wealth advisor of Mittland Financial. Today's guest is Anthony Zhang, co-founder and CEO of Vinovest. The world of wine investment is often seen as an exclusive realm accessible only to the affluent and connoisseurs. However, this perception is gradually changing thanks in part to Anthony Zhang. Vinovest is a revolutionary platform committed to democratizing wine investment by significantly reducing cost and complexity for the average investor. And if that's not enough, here's the real beauty of it all. Vinovest not only empowers you to tap into the world of wine investment, but also allows you to savor the taste of exquisite fine wines while providing the opportunity of turning a profit. Imagine sipping on a delicious Bordeaux or even Burgundy with the potential to watch your portfolio grow. At 21, Anthony suffered a devastating injury that left him paralyzed from the neck down. Rather than succumbing to despair, he displayed remarkable grit, steering his first business from the confines of a hospital room. Against all odds, he scaled and ultimately transitioned out of that company, a monumental achievement considering the circumstances, and he has used that same mindset to build Vinovest. Listen in for some great takeaways about Anthony's entrepreneurial journey as his story serves as a reminder that you can overcome any obstacle with the right mindset. Well, I have the pleasure today of being with Anthony Zhang, co-founder and CEO of Vinovest. This is something that I am excited for this conversation, and I hope you are as well. Welcome to the show, Anthony.
Thanks so much, Larry. It's a pleasure to be on today.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. And in my quest to have you on the show, I did a fair amount of research on you about Vinovest, and we'll spend a good deal of time there. But before we do, I think the entrepreneurial journey and people's backgrounds are so important and so interesting, quite frankly. Perhaps you could give our listeners an insight as to who Anthony Zhang is and what brought you to the point of launching Vinovest, if you would.
So Vinovest is my third company. So going back to the beginning, I started my first business in my freshman year of college. I was enrolled as an undergrad business major. So my goal was always to eventually start a business. But I really thought my path would be go to a good school, get good grades, right? Get good internships, get a good job out of college. And then maybe after a few years, your MBA, right? And then after that, you're ready to start a business. That was my goal heading into college. But just 2 months into my freshman year, I think like many other college students, stumbled upon a very urgent and important problem, which was that I was really starving when I was studying. And the library and the study halls, this was over 10 years ago now. So food delivery apps were not really a thing yet. They were just starting to become popular. And I started a on-demand food delivery app for college campuses called Envoy Now. We linked up with the dining programs on campuses. We made it so that only students could use the app. They had to sign in with their EDU email, so it was really safe and protected. And I had the good fortune of being able to pitch Mark Cuban and Mark Burnett, receiving my first investment offer from them. That was really a transformational time for me because it really gave me a different perspective that I didn't need to wait all of those years to be able to start a real business and feel ready as an entrepreneur. The dorm room side hustle that I started Envoy Now could be that big thing. So I was fortunate enough to also receive a fellowship program from Peter Thiel that gave me the ability to actually take a leave of absence from college, drop out and run that business full time. That was an amazing journey. A little bit over 4 years later, was able to sell the company to a larger food delivery app company that was eventually acquired by Walmart. That was my first entrepreneurial journey. Gave me a taste of the fact that I love to build things. I love to be able to be at the helm of something new. That really kickstarted my entrepreneurial story.
Wow. Did you have any kind of, you had a dream to be an entrepreneur at some point down the road, but you ended up doing it much sooner than you had anticipated because of this need that you saw. Was there something in your background that led you to that point where you wanted to be an entrepreneur, or was it just something that inherently you felt would be a good direction for you?
I've always loved being in control, having that responsibility, right, as a leader. Younger signs would be starting a nonprofit in high school. I had a lot of fun building that, and it was a book exchange nonprofit where we'd be able to collect old AP or SAT or ACT textbooks from juniors and seniors who didn't need them anymore and be able to donate them to the younger students, 9th grade, 10th graders, even very ambitious 8th graders who wanted to get studied up on those textbooks. And I always just thought it was really cool.
The signs were there early, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think they were. Especially after the first experience of Envoy Now, I knew that was without a doubt what I wanted to do in my life, right? I think being in business school or being an undergrad business major, you're exposed to a lot of different ways that you can be able to get into business. And I considered maybe consulting or investment banking, right? But the path of entrepreneurship, I think, just was a much stronger draw and led me down this path.
Amazing. Yeah. I've spoken with many entrepreneurs who throughout their life have faced adversity. I think that's one of many tendencies or driving factors many times. And I understand you suffered a devastating injury that left you paralyzed at the age of 21. How did that experience transform your mindset, and did it impact that entrepreneurial bug or journey for you?
When I was 21, I had a spinal cord injury. Dove into a pool, broke my neck, and shattered my C5 vertebrae, and left me paralyzed pretty much from the shoulders down. So I'm still in a wheelchair today, still a quadriplegic and heavily impaired. And that was in the middle of running my first business, Envoy Now. So I went from just high-flying, feeling I was top of the world, and a lot of my sort of identity and self-worth was really wrapped up in my business. Everything changed, right? I had to relearn the most basic things, like even how to breathe without a ventilator, right? How to be able to feed myself using adaptive tools. And my business was the furthest thing on my mind, right? I needed to learn how to survive again. And I think what really led me back to wanting to go to build that business again, right? It's a very hard thing to do, being an entrepreneur, was really that it gave me something else to focus on. I was in intensive physical therapy and occupational therapy, 6 to 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And I just felt like I needed something more than just that. Another thing that really struck me was that I read a statistic that after a spinal cord injury, only about 25 to 35% of people ever get a job again. A lot of people, unfortunately, stuck on disability or unable to do the job that they used to do, especially with injuries related to folks who were doing manual labor when they got hurt. Mm-hmm. And with entrepreneurship, being a CEO, being a technology-backed company, right, I was finding myself in a really lucky and fortunate position where I could go back to work, right? It wouldn't be the same, but my brain is still there. I'm still me. And that really drove me, right? Like, I don't want to be a part of that 70% of people who will never go back to work. And I want to be able to still contribute to society and be able to still be normal. A big part of what pushed me back into wanting to build my company again was that urge to return to normalcy, right? Already so many things in my life had changed, right? My physical appearance, my independence. I really wanted to get something back from my old life. And that was my business Envoy Now. And still today, right? It's a big part of what drives me and what gets me out of bed is like still wanting to prove to myself and the world that I still have it.
Yeah. And after climbing back the way you have, I mean, I would imagine that there's some parallels between the struggles, the trials and tribulations of coming from where you were to where you are today to being an entrepreneur, right? It kind of puts it in a different perspective. We actually had, I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, Austin Hatch was on our show. He was episode 139. Entrepreneurial guys lived through two plane crashes in which he lost basically his entire family. The second one really debilitated him and he had to overcome a lot of challenges and was a real entrepreneur. He's got a heck of a story. If you don't know it, it's very inspiring, similar to yours. I would suggest taking a look at it. I guess it puts the whole entrepreneurial journey in a bit of perspective. But at the same time, I will tell you, I do like your humor because I did get a pretty good chuckle when I was reading your Instagram bio and it says, quote unquote, trying not to roll over McKenna Zhang's toes, which I found very funny. And I did get a good chuckle out of that. Why do you lead putting that in your bio? You're just putting it out there that this is the situation that I'm in. And listen, I'm not going to let it hold me back, so to speak. So why do you feel like leading with levity is so important?
Especially when you're in an injury like this, it's really easy to just be down on yourself. And I still have down days. I think it's natural. Everyone has down days, but just being thankful for what you have left. I still have the ability to contribute to work, right? I still have the ability to now have more independence, being able to drive again, work again, cook again, right? These are all just really simple joys in life that I took for granted. Also having some levity, right? It's like, hey, like it's not the end of the world. It may seem like that. And there are going to be days where it seems like that, but I'm just really still happy to be here having an amazing supporting wife, family, right? That's all stuff that I can still lead and live despite an injury like this.
Yeah, great lessons. And we're all about joy on the Mitlin Money Mindset. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. But let's shift for a moment to Vinovest, right? You told us a little bit about your journey, Envoy. What led you to found Vinovest? What was the impetus there?
So with Vinovest, which is my current business, we're a wine and spirits investment platform. Prior to that, I was working at a cryptocurrency portfolio management company called Blockfolio. So in alternative assets and just being exposed in the crypto and blockchain space, you meet a lot of people who are very avid investors, have explored a lot of different other alternative assets. So meeting with them, right, they've invested in crypto, they invested in antique cars, they flipped rare watches, art, wine, whiskey, right, all these esoteric asset classes I was exposed to and traded and invested in. And I think the ones that really made the most sense to me was in the alcohol space, right? Wine and whiskey. Just from a fundamental standpoint, you have the old adage, gets better with age like fine wine, right? Everyone has a general idea that wine gets better with age. When you're looking at whiskeys, the older the whiskey or scotch is, the more expensive it is. So it really made sense to me that this was an asset that actually gained value as it went along. Also, the additional fact that you can never really recreate a vintage year, right? If you have a really rare bottle from the year 2000 and somebody made 100,000 cases of it, by the time we're in the year 2020 or 2024 today, there's very, very few left, right? So that natural supply and demand factor also accelerates the price. So between that consumption factor where you can never undrink a bottle, right? And that supply goes down and down as time goes on. And then the actual inherent appreciation of the bottle as it ages, those things just from a fundamental economic supply and demand theory really just resonated with me. It wasn't just speculation. It wasn't just market demand and trading up and down like a lot of art and watches are. There's actually real inherent value being accrued. Those things really resonated with me, especially coming from a crypto angle as well, where one of the greatest sort of arguments for Bitcoin as an investment or store of value is the fixed supply. You can even argue that it's decreasing supply because every day. There are tons of people who forget their wallet secret keys, unfortunately, right? And those Bitcoins are kind of lost forever. Because of those reasons, I was like, all right, this is a really great asset. It's been around for as long as humankind has been around, right? People have been storing and drinking wine for thousands of years. It doesn't really feel like it's going to go away anytime soon. It's not a flash in the pan fad. Like, remember during COVID, like trading cards and sneakers were all the rage, right? People were buying and selling sneakers for even like $900,000. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. Now, not so much, right? Like, for me, it felt like wine and whiskey and other spirits were really ingrained in our society, right? We're always going to be drinking alcohol, whether we like it or not. I wanted to start something that used a new technology focus angle on something that was very old, inaccessible, like the wine and spirits industry.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it as simple as, and maybe this is just me as a novice, I'm not a big wine guy. I am a Scotch whiskey and bourbon guy, so I can understand that a little bit more. But with wine in particular, I mean, is it as simple as the number of bottles that are available in the vintage year to determine if that's going to appreciate, or is it even more complicated than that?
Yeah, I think just breaking it down to its simplest form, it really is that. It's, all right, what is the expected rate of consumption for all of these bottles that were produced? And then as it ages, right, what are the both consumers and critics saying about it? And what is the sort of like ending timeline on when the ideal drinking window is, right? It could be 15 years from release, could be 20 years from release. We don't really know, but that's something that you can also take a look at historical vintages for, right? If we're comparing the, say, 2010 vintage now, which is, you know, now 14 years into the future, we can also predict it based on the 2009, the 2008, the 2007, right? So you have a lot of benchmarks from a data standpoint to be able to analyze when the best time to buy, when the best time to sell is.
We're taking a quick detour from the amazing show today to bring you the Joy and Productivity Journal. Finding a balance between productivity and joy can feel like an impossible task. But fear not. This journal, inspired by themes in my best-selling book, Financial Planning Made Personal, is here to revolutionize the way you approach your daily routine. And because we believe in letting you experience the joy firsthand, you can download this journal for free at financialplanningmadepersonal.com. Before we return to the show, I have a question for you. What did you do today that brought you joy? My understanding is Vinovest is known for making wine investment accessible. I don't think that unless you're in a specific space, walk of life, for example, that you're proactively thinking about making a wine investment. But your goal is really to make this accessible. How does your platform, Vinovest, democratize the world of fine wine, which has, I think, traditionally been seen as some type of elite type of investment, right?
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. When I first heard of wine investing, what I had in mind was like, oh, wow, I need to be ultra wealthy, have a massive wine cellar, right? Have a huge budget. I don't know how to go to an auction or get invited to an auction, right? There's a lot of things at play. And then I thought to myself, all right, even though I had a big wine cellar at home, how do I insure all of this, right? Mm-hmm. What's a specialty insurance company that would understand the value of wine? Those are all the things that an individual would have to deal with if they were going to do this by themselves. It is possible, right? That's why ultra wealthy people do it. Vinovest democratizes it by really taking all those components and taking care of it. All you need to decide as a consumer is, how much do I want to invest in wine or whiskey? You can talk to one of our portfolio advisors if you like, or you can just completely self-service yourself and go through our online platform. And we will actually have an algorithm that determines which wines to buy, which whiskeys to buy. We monitor the market for price updates on a monthly or yearly basis, depending on the product. And then we also give you alerts on, hey, your wine or whiskey is entering that maturity window, right? We're starting to get bids on it. And we'll notify you like, hey, we have an offer for X amount of dollars, right? This would lock in an X amount of profit for you. Do you want to sell it? Most of our customers will opt into an automated selling process, so we don't need to ask them for permission. They've already given that to us from the get-go, and it's a fully passive investment for them, and we actively manage it. So just like a traditional manager would manage a portfolio of stocks and bonds, we just have a portfolio of different wines and whiskeys from different regions, different years, different price points. So we also help them diversify within the asset class.
So if I'm a consumer and I come to Vinovest and I want to make an investment, right? Just so this is clear to our listeners, am I making an investment in a bottle or am I making an investment in a portion or a percentage of several different bottles? And then I guess a little bit further, do I have to do that just in wine or am I doing that in wine and whiskey and just covering it completely as this asset class, if you will?
You are investing in the entire bottle or case or barrel. So we don't do any fractional shares. The reason why is because people can consume them as well if they wanted to. So we do have folks who are wine or whiskey enthusiasts as well. They may decide to just drink a case of their wine that we purchase for them. So because they own that entire case, they can actually get it shipped to their homes if they'd like.
Oh.
That's one of the perks of investing in a real asset is you can actually use it and enjoy it and consume it. And then when you're talking about exposure, we usually will recommend a portfolio of both wine and whiskey. So you can get that entire asset class covered, but you can also choose, right? If you're only interested in whiskey, you can do that as well. Same with wine.
Interesting. Yeah. So this reminds me, like I bought a limited edition bottle of Macallan a couple of years ago. And actually we had him on, Andy from Prime Wine and Liquor. He's my local go-to guy. And he was like, oh, are you drinking this? Or are you going to be saving this and collecting it? And I said, well, if I was going to collect it, I'd buy two bottles because I'd want to have one to drink to know that I enjoy it and like it, and then one to keep for the future. I said, I would never just buy one, not know what the experience was, and just throw it on the shelf. So here you kind of get that similar if you want to utilize it as an investment and save it later on, or sell it later on, I should say. You certainly can, but you also have the option of having that delivered and trying that beverage as well. And then what do you, you get compensated because you're storing it and maintaining it and making sure that either upon delivery to the person who now bought it or the person who bought it in the future, that it's going to be, I guess, as good a shape or as vintage as it should be, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We make our money by the storage and insurance fees, right? This is a long-term asset. Our clients are holding this for multiple years. So we're able to make our money that way. And then we also have a marketplace. So if you're looking to be more active and hands-on, you can also list one of your barrels or one of your cases of wine on the platform. And then different parties, either a Vinovest client or it could be a wine merchant. It could be your wine and spirits guy that you just mentioned who can actually actively bid on things that they're looking for as well. So we also charge a transaction fee and we make money that way too.
Wow, that's amazing. So, I mean, the whiskey piece and the scotch piece is a little bit more in line with my space. I think recently you went into the whiskey lots and what made you branch out? Was that something in your game plan from the beginning or was it, let's dive into the wine area? It was clearly working. And then you looked at other spirits that had similar properties, not necessarily to the taste per se, but to the way it works from a price appreciation standpoint. And then you branched out into whiskey. How did that branch out come into play?
We started with wine, knowing that we wanted to eventually cover the entire wine and spirits industry. But with just our expertise, we started in just one asset. And once we reached that 100 million mark, we knew that, all right, we've got a system down, right? We know some processes. Of course, we made many mistakes along the way, but I think we have a playbook where we can replicate this. And at the same time, we had put out a wait list for our whiskey product. And that wait list was growing and growing and grown past 10,000 people on our mailing list. We're like, all right, we got to give the people what they want as well. So it was a really great convergence of the two. And especially in the last 12 months, we've been really focusing on getting our whiskey product up to par and in line with the maturity of our wine product in terms of its capabilities, the user experience, right? Allowing our customers to buy really in a pretty, I'd say, like industry leading selection of casks, right? You can even buy a rare sherry finished Macallan cask if you wanted to, right? It's all going to be completely stored in a bonded warehouse in Scotland with a master distiller being able to check on it periodically. You even have the ability to come to Scotland, visit your cask, right? We'll do a whole tasting with you, right? So we really wanted to create a whole experience for the investor that was on par with what you can do on the wine side. So we're really happy with the reception that we've gotten so far from our whiskey product, and we're continuing to grow that right now.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, we had on episode 104, we had Mark Gillespie of Whiskey Cast. I don't know if you're familiar with him either, but he runs like a blog and a whiskey gathering every week. And I thought some of the things he talked about were fascinating, but this blows me away. So our listeners have an understanding, right? Because I think, as we had discussed in our conversation, that initially people think about wine investing, whiskey, scotch investing, and ultra high net worth. And your goal is really to democratize this so that it's not just available to that certain sector of wealth. If I'm sitting there listening to this and I have an interest, right? I'm interested in wine, or I'm interested in scotch or whiskey. What type of investment dollars am I looking at to make an investment in a bottle of wine or whiskey, et cetera?
In terms of the entry level, we're really proud of being able to really, I think, have an accessible entry point, right? So on the wine side, you can be able to get a case of wine for $1,000 investment. We always recommend diversifying. So most of our customers do start out with a few cases from different regions. And then on the whiskey side, you can buy a lot of whiskey for as little as $300. So to your point of maybe having one to try and one to invest in, right? Most people lots or a couple casks, and then they'll move up from there, right? Maybe they'll start with an American barrel and then want to diversify with a Scotch barrel, or vice versa. We have those both as options for folks who want to start with us and just dip their toe in, right? If they're curious, wanting to learn more, the best way is to, I think, put a small investment into it, see how it works for you, and then decide to allocate more or not.
Sure. So that's on the lower side. Let me ask you this. What is the most expensive bottle of wine? Let's start with wine that's been purchased, or should I say invested in, on your platform?
We've had a case of wine for $50,000, $60,000 a case. These would be really rare red burgundies from great vintage years. Those are extremely coveted, right? They're ones where maybe only a few hundred cases are produced in the world. Highly allocated, so it'd be really tough to get on your own as well if you didn't have connections. And on the barrel side, I mean, we've had a barrel sold for over $350,000. So these are really rare, mature Scotch casks. Maybe they're already 25, 30 years old. So they're almost one of a kind. So they definitely go up on the high end, which is great, right? It shows like the diversity and the range that investors can have, right? Of course, have one of these ultra rare cases of wine or barrels is going to be having higher expected returns, but also there's less buyers available. The liquidity is going to be chunkier than if you're buying something for a few thousands of dollars, where there's a lot of other units that can be traded in terms of the volume, and also a lot more market demand in terms of the regularity of it.
Do you see, I mean, since your experience with launching Vinovest, I guess also, and then the Scotch being newer, does one have the ability to appreciate greater than the other, or is it pretty much depends upon those factors that we've discussed, the vintage, the lot, how many bottles, et cetera?
There's definitely a great amount of variability within the asset classes, but if we're just taking a step back and looking at them from past couple decades standpoint, wine has been around like a 10, 11% a year appreciation asset. Whiskey, especially with Scotch, has been closer to the 15% mark. So I think there's definitely been a greater rise in rare whiskeys, especially ones that are more mature, right? The 20, 30 year plus on the Scotch side. And then on the American whiskey side, it's people don't drink it that old, but it'd be closer to like the 4 to 8 year mark. Those have been, I think, some of the really standout performers. But even on the wine side, right? If you're looking at rare champagnes or rare wines from Burgundy, those two subsectors of the asset class have been closer to 15, 20% a year over the last 5, 10 years. So there certainly are trends within them. But overall, when we're talking historical returns with prospective clients and they're looking at where this could potentially fit within their portfolio, we see it as definitely a very long-term asset, needing at least a 5 to 10 year horizon, and then having relatively low volatility, as about a third the volatility of the S&P 500 over the last 20 years. And then finally, just the main thing is the lack of correlation, right? The factors that drive the wine and whiskey prices really have nothing to do with what's going on in the S&P 500.
Some might argue that it does have something to do with the S&P 500. It might have to do when the S&P 500 is on the way down. People have a tendency to drink more wine and whiskey. I don't know. I'm just joking. But
you're absolutely right.
There might be some evidence there. I don't know.
During recessions, alcohol consumption doesn't work. So yeah, we have seen that, at least certainly during COVID, alcohol consumption went way up, but also during the Great Recession in 08, 09, we've seen that as well. So to the detriment of society, but it's a positive when it comes to the market that we're in.
Yeah. So Anthony, we mentioned earlier, we're all about joy here on the Mintland Money Mindset. And I told you we'd talk a little bit about that later on. So we're there. We ask each of our guests the same last and final question, which is, because we're all about joy, what did you do today that brought you joy and put you in the right mindset for success?
I love being outside. I love the sunshine. That's why I'm in Southern California.
So yeah, I was going to say.
Being able to have a sunny day and during this wintertime recording with my dog Duke, giving him some cuddles. I think that's just a simple joy every morning ritual, being able to take him out, enjoy the fresh air before I start the workday.
Sure. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that with us. And Anthony, we're going to have all the information about you and VinoVest in the show notes. But if people want to learn more about you, learn more about VinoVest, connect with you, what's the easiest and the best place for them to do that?
Our website is vinovest.co. So VinoVest.co. You can also directly email me. So I'm anthony@vinovest.co. So I read and respond to almost every email, unless it's spam. But if you mentioned that you saw us on this podcast and had any questions or thoughts, I will most certainly respond to you.
Awesome. Well, listen, Anthony, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I thank you. I will continue to be watching VinoVest more on the scotch and whiskey side than, in fairness, on the wine side for me. But it's exciting and interesting, and I appreciate your time and enjoy the day.
Absolutely. You too, Larry. Take care.
I want to thank Anthony Zhang for being a guest on the Mintland Money Mindset. Anthony knows what it takes to bring a company from start to scale to liquidity event. He is a true serial entrepreneur. His venture to democratize investment in wine, something that was usually only available to the wealthy, is amazing and something that levels the playing field for all to consider. Anthony Zhang and VinoVest can be found across most social media platforms. All the contact information needed to find them can be found in the show notes. Thank you for joining us this week on the Mintland Money Mindset. Make sure you visit our website at mintlandmoneymindset.com and smash the subscribe button so you don't miss a show. We encourage you to help others find our valuable content, and please don't keep us a secret. You can also schedule an Is There a Fit call right from our website or by using the link that you'll find in the description section of your podcast player or app. And be sure to join us for our next episode to learn more about getting your mind right when it comes to all things money.
The opinions voiced in the Mintland Money Mindset Show with Lawrence Sprung are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. No strategy ensures success or protects against loss. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Guests on the Mintland Money Mindset Show are not affiliated with CWM LLC.